Talk radio just got a little cooler.
Chad Benson.
Chad Benson.
The Chad Benson Show.
Theme. How's it going, party people? Happy Wednesday, getting you over the hump. I am playing injured. I did my show today. I came back, I took something to drink, and my voice went whack. But I am going to muscle through it. That's what I do. Mary Tyler Moore died today at age 80. You know, I could start with politics and whatnot, but you know what? There's some pop culture here that has meaning in Mary Tyler Moore. Let me tell you something. I remember watching it as a kid with my mom and my dad. She was, I think, in many ways, the quintessential woman who broke through the glass ceiling. She had her own show, and who she represented on that show was, I think, really, you know, for a lot of people, it was not only funny, and not only was it, I think, very real, especially in that day and age. It was just something that was so, you know, it was something unique. And I have to admit, in the 70s, I think the sitcoms were far more real and based on a lot of things. Look at all of them. I mean, whether it be whether it be All in the Family, whether it be the Jeffersons, whether it be, you know, Rhoda and all of those. These things were real. Was it One Day at a Time? Which, by the way, they've redone now. That's on Netflix. So, but those were very real. And she was somebody who, in her day and age, she branched out, and you could still see it back then. If you go back and watch some of those shows, It's amazing to see, and she died at 80 today. She suffered for a very long time. She was a diabetic. She had brain surgery in 2011, and she was it was something, you know, very special. And I remember my mom and I, when we watched the Mary Tyler Moore Show, and I watched it with my dad, and we watched reruns of like the Dick Van Dyke Show and stuff. It was much like Lucille Ball. You look back in those days, there were some women that were powerful in the industry, and they did it in a very quiet, subtle way. And, you know, she represented, I think, a lot for women in the 70s. And again, I think she brought a realism to women who were branching out and literally going out there and trying to make it on their own in a day and age when that still rarely happened. And if it did happen, it was a lark usually. And she, you know, she was not that type of person. And I think it represented a lot to a lot of people. And you know what? She was funny, too. She was talented. Great actress. Very talented. She was nominated for Academy Award for Ordinary People in 1980 with Timothy Hutton. And I think Robert Redford directed it. And it was just it's a very depressing movie. But Sutherland's in it, right, too, right? Well, yeah. The older Sutherland, not Kiefer, not 24 guy, Donald Sutherland. But, you know, she was funny, and, you know, she got her start really where we came to know her on the Dick Van Dyke Show, and she did that 7 successful seasons there, 8 successful seasons with the Mary Tyler Moore Show, and, you know, I mean, just listen to the talent that she had. Check out this is the usual Dick Van Dyke, Mary and Rob.
Oh, Rob! Oh, Rob! Oh, Rob! Oh, Rob! Oh, Rob!
Oh, Rob! I mean, every episode. I still watch it. I love Dick Van Dyke Show. I still watch it. Because even then, even back in the 60s then, if you look back, she wasn't this woman who didn't have anything to add to anything. She was as much a partner in his life and in Rob Petrie's life. And that to me was something. And she faced a lot of obstacles later on in life, especially with the brain surgery and stuff. And she battled it with dignity, and she battled her diabetes with dignity. She was a very quiet woman, didn't see her out and about. And, you know, there's always been the rumors. Welcome to the world of TMZ and the Inquirer. The minute they think somebody's sick and dying, they're going to find out about it. And it was reported. It was really funny. TMZ popped it up. And then we were doing the show earlier today. for a Sacramento show that I do. And as that was going on, it was we were watching this, and he said, "Hey, yeah, Mary Tyler Moore's on her deathbed." And you never know how to take these things. And then within 3 minutes, boom, CNN. But I just remember as a kid growing up, you know, because I grew up in a situation like that. I grew up in a situation where my mother had to pull all the weight. My mom had to pull a lot of the weight because my father, God bless him, I loved him, but he had his issues with drugs, with alcohol, and it was feast or famine. And my mother didn't want to live that way. And she, you know, she did everything on her own. She went back. She got a college degree. She worked. She became a part of a big organization and a company. She went and got her degree for her theology degree as well as her psychology degree. She did a lot of things, and it was always, you know, there was a strength there. And I look back at these Mary Tyler Moore things, and it sounds weird, you know, like I said, we could sit here and talk politics all day long, and we'll get to all that stuff. But this, to me, was just something that I sat there today, and it was, you know, it was a memory of my mother and her memory of understanding that for a lot of women in the 70s, Mary Tyler Moore represented a lot more than just 30 minutes of fun. She represented somebody who was doing it all by herself. And the fun was there. And that's what's great. Speaking of fun, here is Mary with Rhoda as they argue and play on a Christmas theme version of the show.
Oh, wow. This is going to be some weird Christmas.
What do you mean, man?
Well, my apartment's all decorated. I got presents under the tree, and I'm not going to be here to enjoy it. I'll be working.
That's it. Cheer yourself up.
Yeah, but let me tell you something. When I was a little girl, we used to drive up to my grandparents every Christmas, and on the way, we'd pass this diner, and there'd be these little old men having their Christmas dinner all alone, and it's just that this year I'm going to be one of those little old men.
You know, I came down here because I was a little depressed, but said to myself, Mary will cheer me up.
Again, a much different time. I think it represented a time and a day and an age when realism was front and center in the 70s. And I don't know if you get away with those kind of things now, like you did. You know, we've got cable that gets away with it. But remember, that's network TV. And she, you know, I just look at this in a passing on. Not so much about, you know, Mary Tyler Moore. Not make a big deal out of it. She was 80 years old. She lived a great life. But I look back and I just think about my mother and the effect that it had on my mom. And she used to love that show. And just, it was, you know, it was real. And again, she represented something. And, you know, this past weekend, women across the country were marching, right? They're out there marching. And they want equality. They want all of those things. In a subtle way, you see things like this, and you realize that it's just, you know, it's one piece of a puzzle that I don't think people really understand. So, yes, passing today, 80, Mary Tyler Moore. The Chad Benson Show, Facebook, at Chad Benson Show, Twitter, CHADBENSON. Bottom of the hour, Macawiak. I screw up his name. Phil, how do you say his name? I screw it up every time.
I don't remember. I have to go back and get my.
Yeah, drink. Man, it's Makowiak?
Vakowiak. Makovitz?
I don't know. This guy's coming on. We'll get his name right when it's time. But he knows everything there is to know about the upcoming thing that's happening next Thursday that many people said was the defining thing about this election that needed to happen. This is why it was so important. I'm talking about the Supreme Court. He is going to break it down for us from top to bottom. We're going to talk to him about it. Who are the three that he thinks have a chance? Is there any outsiders out there? It's very interesting to see what's going on out there. The Chad Benson Show, Facebook, at Chad Benson Show, Twitter, CHADBENSON. Chad at ChadBensonShow.com. You can text the show as well, 323-538-2423. As you can hear, I'm playing injured, but I play through pain. That's who I am. That's what I'll do. And the other thing is, it doesn't hurt. I just don't know why it's not. It's I can do crazy voices with it, but I can't do my normal voice. That's crazy. Straight ahead, we're going to talk about today in politics because there is some craziness going on. He's signing away all kinds of stuff. Wait to hear what he says about torture. Plus, we're bringing something back that we did for a long time. We decided to bring it back for the national show. It's called the Urban Word of the Day. We're going to make you hipper and cooler just because. It's the Chad Benson Show.
Yo, DJ, drop that beat, partner.
Oh, dear God, no.
Do you have any questions?
You're listening to The Chad Benson Show.
What is up, party people? Hope you're doing well. It is The Chad Benson Show. You know, our aim here is to infotain you, and it's also to make you hip and cool, right? Like, to make you as hip and cool as we possibly can. We used to do this a while ago, and people said, why don't you bring this back? Because it does help us with our coolness. So we've decided to bring it back, and every day you're going to get a new one of these. It is the Urban Word of the Day. Today's Urban Word.
It's time for the Urban Word of the Day, fam.
What? Right now?
Time to get a little more hip on the streets.
I can't understand a word you're saying.
Urban Word of the Day.
All right, your Urban Word of the Day, Phil, is Li-Fi. L-I-F-I. Li-Fi. It's when you see a free Wi-Fi connection, you join the network, but it makes you sign up for some crap and tries to charge your ass. That's a Li-Fi. That's your Urban Word of the Day.
Thank you for saying that in dated urban slang so that I'll understand you.
That there was the Urban Word of the Day. We damn stretched your cranium.
Ooh, stretching the cranium. Today, the president, Trump, has been very busy. Last night, he said he was going to sign an executive order. He did, and that executive order is pretty simple. It's time to start building that wall. Take it away, Mr. Trump.
The Secretary of Homeland Security, working with myself and my staff, will begin immediate construction of a border wall.
A border wall. What exactly is that going to be? Says it's going to be a couple months from now before it'll probably get done. We're going to pay for it at first. This should be no shock. I think it is the breadth of which all of this is happening, I think, is shocking people. But remember, when you rule by, you know, by fiat like this, when you rule through executive orders, those things can be undone as well. And a lot of what he has done has been undoing what the former president did, Barack Obama. Now he is doing it like this in certain situations. He wants to get it going. His whole thing is he wants to make sure that you understand that he's serious about getting his stuff done. And this is what he's going to do. How will he make Mexico pay for it? Because he continues to say, Mexico's going to pay for it. Mexico. And they're like, no, we are not. And they're like, yes, you are. He's like, no, we are not. I think what's going to happen is either through trade and a renegotiation of NAFTA and or aid that goes down there, money will probably in some way, shape, or form be either deducted and they're talking about fees of crossing the border, et cetera, et cetera. You just don't know. But he's going to do all he can. They estimate it's going to cost between $11 and $30 billion, which means it'll cost $70 billion or $100 billion because it's going to take forever and a day. We're already $20 trillion in debt. That's not good for us to be spending more money. The other thing he did today as he signed more executive orders, this one is to me, I think, as important as any of the things because this is where the rubber meets the road. It's time to put up or shut up. And this is about sanctuary cities.
Cracks down on sanctuary cities. Empowers ICE officers to target and remove those who pose a threat to public safety.
Public. I was thrown into the public. So, and in California yesterday, Jerry Brown, State of the State, he delivered the, we're going to do everything we can to protect people that are immigrants, undocumented. We're going to fight it tooth and nail. And why that's important is because California is the sixth largest economy. And it's a huge, huge thriving economy, especially when it comes to trade and things of this nature. But it's a very expensive place to live, and it's a very expensive state to run. And the truth is, the issues they're going to have now is they have said that they're going to fight him tooth and nail. They have said they're going to come and do all they can to give him hell. They're going to be the testing fish for a lot of this. What's a tester fish, if you don't know? When you buy a saltwater tank and it's really expensive, you don't throw the $300 fish in there. You buy a $2.99 fish. And if it survives all the salt and the saline and everything in there, you can put the really expensive in there, the really expensive one. That's what California is going to be because they're going to fight him. And he is threatening to pull away the funding. And I have news for you. California said yesterday, if that happens, it could be devastating to them. He said he was going to do it and he's doing it. He said he was going to put it through, and he's going to do it. This is what people wanted. By the way, in California, out of a Berkeley, this was a UC Berkeley poll, a UC Berkeley poll, 65% of Hispanics don't agree with sanctuary cities. Overall, 74% of people don't agree with sanctuary cities. Think about that for a second. Crazy. This is what he said he was going to do. It has been fast. It has been quick. He is going through things fast. The only thing I wished he would have done today is if he would have signed the executive order at the border. How awesome would that be? Have a desk brought out there. He just stands there, his sweet hair flapping in the wind. You know, maybe on the Rio Grande as he cruises on one of those little, those airboats. Just totally signing one away. So we're going to see what happens. But it's going to be very interesting. And we've got to, you know, I mean, this is what people wanted and this is what they're getting. This should be no surprise to a lot of people. It shouldn't be. It should be very little surprise. This is what he said he was going to do. He is doing it. But when you rule by, executive fiat, you can also, you know, pay for it by executive fiat because the next person can undo a lot of these things. But I am, I'm interested to watch what he does. I really am. And I hope he gets away from the baloney. And we'll get to the baloney later. And is there a method to the madness in the baloney of, you know, how big was the crowd at the inauguration to 3 to 5 million people illegally voted to, you know, that stuff, you know, that stuff takes away from all of the other things he's trying to do. And, you know, is there a method to that madness? I don't know. But it's interesting, for sure. Maybe not always in a great way. Just because it's interesting doesn't always mean it's great. But that was what he was up to today. And you know, it's one of those things where you go to bed at night and you're like, I don't even know what it's going to be like tomorrow. I don't know what he's going to do tomorrow. I could not tell you. Joining me next is Matt Mikowiak. He is he's got the inside knowledge of what's going on with the Supreme Court. And that was always the big thing you heard, right? This is for the future of our company, a country, whoever becomes president. This is it. Like, this is, you know, the next 20 years, this thing could be, you know, flipped one way or another. Well, the Republicans got in, and this guy's going to tell us who the final three are, what they're about, and if there's any surprises. Straight ahead, it's the Chad Benson Show.
The Chad Benson Show. Talk radio just got a little cooler.
Chad Benson.
Chad Benson.
The Chad Benson Show.
It is hump day. It is Wednesday. We are 8 days away from finding out who is going to be Trump's nominee for the Supreme Court. Tweeted that out earlier. Next Thursday, he will make his announcement. Joining us now, he's president of the Potomac Strategy Group. He has got a podcast called Mac on Politics. Mark Mikowiak joins us. Thanks so much for coming on today, Mark.
My pleasure, Matt. It's Matt. Yeah, no problem.
Matt, I'm sorry about that. Hey, Matt, let me ask you a quick question. Here we are. You know, we're 8 days away from when he says he's going to announce something. You know, we've heard there's 21. Now we're down to three. What strategy is going into it? Is this all about Trump picking it, or are the Republicans having some sort of say along the way in who they think would be the best person for this position?
No, I have no doubt that that Republicans have some say. Of course, President Trump had congressional leaders, including the Judiciary Committee chair and ranking member, Democrat Dianne Feinstein from California, over this just yesterday. So, you know, at this point, you get down to a short list, you present it to Capitol Hill, and you find out who's acceptable, who's not acceptable. The last thing Trump wants to do in his first month in office is put a Supreme Court nominee forward that can't get confirmed. That consumes time. It makes his administration look weak. It doesn't put a ninth person on the Supreme Court. And honestly, it's really not even what he's working on right now. He's working on all these other different issues. So I think we are down to three or four people. It's possible there's a surprise name that hasn't been in there. I saw Mike Lee, the senator from Utah, who has a lot of fans and would be a great Supreme Court justice, finally said yesterday that he would accept a nomination if he were nominated. But yes, I do think there are two or three appellate court judges, this Gorsuch and Hardiman, that I think people are really focusing on those two individuals in addition to Pryor from Alabama. Those three, I think, are probably the three finalists. But no, at this point, look, it's going to be up to Hill leaders, and particularly the Judiciary Committee. I mean, they want to find out, are Democrats really going to filibuster one of these nominees? You know, if they do that, you have to have 60 votes to break a filibuster. You only have 52 Republicans. So you need 8 Democrats to break a filibuster.
You know, you talk about the three. We got Neil Gorsuch, Hardiman, Thomas Hardiman, and you got William Pryor. Pryor seems to be the one that a lot of conservatives seem to be looking to. Is this may be the guy that we want, the conservative side of the things. But Gorsuch seems to be the hot name that's going around right now. What goes into the, you know, into this kind of thought process of who you're going to choose?
Yeah, there's a lot of different factors, right? I mean, at some level, it's going to come down to, you know, Trump meeting privately with his finalists and deciding who he thinks the best judge would be. And some, you know, to some extent, that's going to come down probably to a personal relationship. Trump puts a lot of value on personal relationships. But look, the list itself was a solid list to begin with. It was 9 people. It was then expanded to 21. Senator Ted Cruz and then Vice President nominee Mike Pence expanded the list by working together with Trump. And that predated or was kind of a prerequisite to Cruz endorsing Trump as he did the day before the first debate. But the factors that you look at are, can they get confirmed? Are they a reliable conservative? Do they have anything in their background, anything whatsoever that would be disqualifying? Do they have any controversial things they've said or written over the years that could be used to defeat their nomination? How old are they, right? You don't want to nominate a judge that's 60 years old who can only serve 10 or 15 years. You're going to want to put someone on there who's in their mid-30s to mid-40s who can go spend 25, 30, 35 years on the court. So those are the kinds of factors you look at. But at the end of the day, you know, look, they want to put the strongest conservative they possibly can on the court, but they recognize that they're probably going to need 8 Democrats to cross over and support this individual eventually. And so you've got to figure out who can get 8 Democratic votes in the Senate right now as a conservative Supreme Court nominee. And that's a big question.
That's a huge question. Talking to Matt Mikowiak, president of the Potomac Strategy Group. He's also got a podcast, Mac on Politics. Matt, as we talk about that, Neil Gorsuch is 49. Hardiman is 51. Pryor is 54. Gorsuch is, a lot of people look at him and he's built in the mold of somebody like Antonin Scalia, which I think a lot of people look like. Scalia passed away. This may be the guy that's there. Pryor, on the other hand, is very pro-life. And that's what you hear Trump saying. You want somebody who's pro-life on the court. And again, I don't know much about Hardiman. We've heard about gun rights support, police powers. Those seem to be his thing. But it's very interesting when you break it down because, you know, this is, you know, he said he was going to put somebody on there pro-life. A lot of people are saying Gorsuch is the kind of guy we can probably get through. But Pryor is the pro-life thing. And I think that's where the battle's going to come, especially from the left.
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, you have to you know, think about what kinds of views would be unacceptable to, let's say, all or almost all Senate Democrats, right? And so if they truly believe that one of these judges would overturn Roe versus Wade, or if they had ever said or written that, I mean, that is the kind of thing that a Democratic U.S. senator is gonna oppose to their dying breath. Now, there are a couple of Democratic senators who are exceptions. I'd put Joe Manchin of West Virginia and Heidi Heitkamp of North Dakota perhaps as exceptions to that. And this is part of the subtext that's so interesting in the 2018 cycle, right? I know we just had an election, but there are now, you know, 25 Democratic senators who are up for re-election in 2018, and 10 of them, Chad, are running from states that Trump won 2 months ago, 4 of whom are running from states that Trump won with, I think, 55 or 56% or more. Okay, so a lot of these Democrats right now are saying, I'm going to oppose Trump no matter what he does. He can say the sky's blue and I'm going to oppose him. That is not sustainable because at some point they're going to stop thinking about Democratic unity and they're going to start thinking about their own reelection. Whether the Supreme Court battle becomes that kind of fight, I don't know. Now, to your point, you're right. These different judges have different strengths, different weaknesses, different vulnerabilities. You know, I read an interesting analysis that Hardiman may be the one to watch because he serves on the same appellate court that Trump's sister serves on, and that she's a big fan of his and perhaps might have even been instrumental in recommending him and making him a finalist. Now, look, I think, again, all these choices that were on the original list of 9, the later list of 21, are people that have been vetted by the Federalist Society, vetted by the Heritage Foundation. These are all solid conservatives. But, I mean, again, we've been burned before in the past. We've been burned by Anthony Kennedy. We've been burned by David Souter. Some of us definitely feel that way about the Chief Justice John Roberts as it relates to Obamacare. we don't want to get burned again. And honestly, replacing Scalia is very important to a lot of conservatives who care about the future of the court and know that we need a brilliant, persuasive, thoughtful, and, you know, just courageous conservative justice that can serve on the Supreme Court for 25, 30, 35 years and really try to, you know, fill the shoes that Scalia left. Those are big shoes to fill.
You know, you talk about Lee maybe being a surprise. Could that throw a wrench into it, especially when it goes to the confirmation, because he is friends, because a lot of these people know him, because there is that working relationship that maybe that there isn't obviously with any of these judges? Could that be the thing that surprises them? Again, the Trump is the kind of guy that seems to want to surprise people and will do some stuff that we don't, you know, think about. Could that be the surprise in this? And would that make it even tougher for them as far as confirmation going of turning him away?
That's kind of how I feel. You know, Cruz has said Lee would be his choice. You know, Lee has clerked for a Supreme Court justice, just as Cruz has. He is an absolutely brilliant legal scholar. He's a constitutional expert. I've seen this firsthand in small groups and in large groups as I've been around him over the years. I think he'd be dynamite. And to your point, it is the Senate that confirms, right? And so senators generally are pretty friendly and pretty chummy when they're on opposite sides of the aisle. They still have to work together. They work together on nonpartisan issues. Their staffs get to know each other. They get to know each other socially to some extent. So it's harder to till your dying breath oppose another senator, almost no matter who it is, for a job, particularly one like this. It's a lifetime important appointment, and that is historic in nature. So I am not discounting Lee at all. I think he has a lot of fans at high levels. I think he'd be a dynamite Supreme Court justice. He might be the closest thing to Scalia that we have. He truly might be the closest thing that we have to Scalia. Now, that said, his name is not being mentioned very much. So I think it makes more sense to focus on Gorsuch and Hardiman and Pryor and maybe one or two others whose names have been floating around too. But there's going to be, you know, back and forth that'll happen over the next week or so. It looks like Trump's going to make his announcement a week from tomorrow, and I believe he said next Thursday. So there will be a lot of jockeying over the next week or so, as I don't think Trump's made his decision yet. He may have one person he prefers, but right now he wants to find someone who he knows can get confirmed. He does not want to take 2 months of his administration and get sidetracked and even risk not getting his Supreme Court justice confirmed, because that would just bring on more fights and it would make his administration look very weak.
Who is the Democrat that could throw a monkey wrench in all of this? Schumer said he's not going to do what they did to Garland. But who is the Democrat that Republicans fear could make this thing an absolute nightmare and a blight to the first 100 days of this administration?
Well, I would say two Democrats matter more than anyone else. One is Schumer. I mean, Schumer's going to decide whether a filibuster is their legislative strategy or not. Number one. And number two, in filibustering Supreme Court nominee is basically unprecedented. Number two is going to be Dianne Feinstein, who is the top Democrat on the Senate Judiciary Committee. And she's going to be really someone who's very important. If she could ultimately support the nominee once the confirmation hearings occur, which would be, you know, a month or so probably after the nomination is made, that would be the end of it. That would be the end of the battle. But she's a pretty hardcore liberal and pretty committed liberal. In fact, I think she's making noise about running again for re-election. I believe she's in her late 70s.
She's 173.
She might be in her early 80s at this point. So she's going to be thinking about Democratic politics in California. So it would surprise me if she ultimately supports Trump's nominee. But those two really stick out. But the people I'd focus on are the Democrats on the Senate Judiciary Committee. Those are the Democrats that are going to matter here. Those are the ones that are going to be questioning the nominee, questioning the witnesses, meeting with the nominee privately, being on television talking about this issue. Those are the people to watch.
Last question, I'll let you go. Appreciate you coming on today, Matt. What's your gut say of the three that everybody is really talking about, Gorsuch, Hardiman, and Pryor? What's your gut say that he's going to announce next Thursday?
You know, my gut says Hardiman, just because I think he maybe has met Hardiman privately before this whole thing started. I think even a few years ago, perhaps. My guess is there's a prior existing relationship there, and he's a solid, solid choice. So that's my guess. But I think it's close between him and Gorsuch right now. I think And again, the age difference is significant. The fact that Pryor is 54, to me, that just doesn't make much sense. Why would you put someone on, who could only be on there for 15 years, perhaps? That just doesn't make sense. But I'm not convinced there's not a surprise option in there. You know how Trump loves to build suspense and surprise us all.
Absolutely. His name is Matt Mikowiak. He is the president of Potomac Strategy Group in Austin in Washington, D.C. He's got a podcast called Mac on Politics. Check it out. You get that on iTunes and everywhere?
Absolutely.
All right, my man. Appreciate you coming on, Dave. We'll be watching out for this next announcement next week. As again, this was something that a lot of people said was the big issue when it came to this election. We appreciate you coming on, man.
My pleasure. Take care.
It's going to be interesting. It's going to be very interesting. And who knows? You know what would be great is if he just said, and we decided to put Ted Cruz on there. And like Ted's like, what? Ted's a pain in my ass. I figure, you know what? This will be great for him to do. Get him out of my hair. The Chad Benson Show, Facebook, at Chad Benson Show, Twitter, Chad Benson. You can text the program, 323-538-2423, 323-538-2423. It's the Chad Benson Show.
How the hell does that happen?
That just might be the dumbest idea I've ever heard, ever.
This is the Chad Benson Show.
Oh, man, I tell you what, it's interesting to see what's going to happen. You know, Trump, you never know what he's going to do. Where's the surprise going to come from with Trump? Where is it going to come from? Is he going to look at somebody and say, you know what, Lee, you're it. You're the one. You're the one who's going to be the nominee. Cruz just sitting around doing nothing, right? Just sitting around one day. Hey, did you hear you were nominated to be Supreme Court Justice? What? Did God tell me to do that? No, it was Trump. Are you sure? It's going to be very interesting in the fight and the battle that's going to be there. And it is going to be there will be some battle. And you got to think to yourself, he has said pro-life is the thing that he is going to be his number one thing, right? Pro-life. That is what this has been about. Pro-life and guns. Who's the one that is closest to Antonin Scalia? And by the way, as I said yesterday, for everybody who's freaking out that they're going to take choice away, it's not going to happen. He doesn't get two justices or three justices. He's going to have one justice. And right now it's 5-4. Right now it's 5-4. Right now it's 5-3, but even when you add another one, it's going to be 5-4. That's not going to change. That's not. Not now. And that's why you're going to see the likes of Ruth Bader Ginsburg and Kennedy. They're going to hang on for as long as they can because of the fear factor that maybe that would happen. You're seeing states already push and push and push. And I was reading somewhere, was it Texas now, that you may be forced to have a grave and a headstone. You know, they're going to do, and it's funny, it is the same fight with gun control, right? You know, you got to do a little bit more. You got to do a little bit more. You got to register here. You got to register there. You got to register your bullets. You got to register. It's the eroding of certain situations. And again, I am somebody who I believe in life, but I don't want to take away choice. And people say, well, how can you be that way? I said, because you know what? I am not here to decide your morals. That's a you thing. I am not here to decide how you live your life. I am not in your life at that moment when you make that choice. And I hope there are good people around you to support you in whatever choice you have. But that's really what this is about. You know? And we'll see. I mean, you know, he tweeted out today that this is what it's going to do. Well, this is what it's going to be. It's going to be Thursday of next week. And I don't know if one of these three, if there is an outsider, if Lee is an outsider. You know, it's, you know, this is what the battle's going to be. And the likes of Chuck Schumer have said that they're not going to do the same thing that they did to Garland, and they're going to give somebody a hearing and they're going to hear what they have to say. Who is it up there? I like the Lee idea in a sense, because when you think about the Lee idea, like you say, you've got somebody up there who is, you know, what are they going to do? Take him on? They're friends with him. He knows them. He understands them. They understand him. They're probably not going to go after him the way they may go after Pryor or the others. So you never know. And with Trump, you never know. You, and this is what I'm starting to learn. And this is what I think a lot of people don't understand. You just don't know with him. You just don't know because he is the king of pivot, right? And we always think he's going to pivot to the center. He's going to pivot to the moderate. He pivots to the place that you least likely expect him to pivot. And that's what makes it hard to get a gauge of what he's going to do. They're saying, people close to the administration saying, these are the three. We'll find out. And this is what it's going to be. You know, this is maybe his most important appointee as far as his legacy and his longevity. This is going to be it. Because this person will be there for 2+ decades, especially if they're in their late 40s, early 50s. The Chad Benson Show, Facebook, at Chad Benson Show, Twitter, ChadBensonShow.com, chad@ChadBensonShow.com. You can text the program, 323-538-2423, 323-538-2423. You can also email the show, chad@ChadBensonShow.com. Of course, we have this phone thing. It's crazy. 844-DIG-CHAD, 844-344-2423. This be the Chad Benson Show.
The Chad Benson Show.